John chapter 2. You wonder when you get through with John chapter 1, where will it go from here? John chapter 1, as we talked last week, it's this magnificent beginning in the first 18 verses where John lays down basically where he's going to go for the rest of the book. And he lays out all these wonderful themes of life and death and light and dark and so many other wonderful things that he says. And we hear these names of Jesus, that He is the Word, that He is God the one and only, that He's the Lamb of God, that He is the Son of God, that He is the Teacher, that He is the Messiah, that He is the King of Israel, that He is Jesus of Nazareth, Son of Joseph, that He is the Son of Man. And after hearing all of that trumpeted in those first verses, you wonder, so where do you go from here? And when you read the material that we call chapter 2, then you suddenly realize that the end of chapter 1 is this verse that says that Jesus calls Himself the Son of Man. And the last verse in chapter 2, remembering all along that John didn't think it for a minute that now I'm writing chapter 1 and now I'm writing chapter 2. He didn't think about that. And I'm not sure if the inspiration of Scripture really ever attended to the numberings. I don't know. But it does seem interesting now at this late date to notice that the very last verse in chapter 2 says that Jesus did not need anyone to tell him what was in folks, because he knew what was in people. That you end chapter 1 with him being the Son of Man, and you end chapter 2 with him knowing full well what is in people. And so the question that you ask as you read through that block of material is, in what way are we seeing Jesus as the Son of Man? In what way are we seeing Jesus as the one who knows what it is to live in this world, what it is to be a person in this world? What are we seeing here? And when we look at that, we find out that this is a great man to have come near. He's a good man to have around. Excuse me. And there are three different stories really here, three different things I would love for you to hear, and maybe if John put them together, maybe by the time we get through talking about them, they will seem to melt and sort of run together. But right after he says that he's the Son of Man, chapter 2 begins with Jesus at a wedding. And this wedding technically is not the way Jesus intended to begin his ministry. And I think if you were to have asked him, he would have said, this doesn't count. This doesn't count as the beginning. But John, when he tallies it up, he counts it. He counts it. But Jesus is at a wedding, and I don't know. Weddings are a panic. You know, weddings are just a panic. There are girls around who are just, they just look very nice. Girls at a wedding look very nice. And the guys, well, they're guys at a wedding too. And some of them look pretty nice, but it's a big deal, and it's taken at its best. A wedding is the coming together of families, and there's stories, and there are nowadays there are embarrassing photographs, and there is that strange uncle that shows up out of nowhere and sort of tries to take over, and there are all these things that go on. There is the mother of the bride trying frantically to get it all just right so that she can have the wedding she never had, and then there's the mother of the groom wondering, how do I appear to be present while yet invisible? And both fathers are standing around with checkbooks in hand and looking rather pitiful. That's our weddings. Those weddings in the older days, they were days long, but had many of the same elements, And Jesus is invited to this wedding at Cana, just down the road from Nazareth. Not far, not really very far at all. Maybe he was a relative, maybe he was a friend, maybe he was, but if you read this story, if you know this story, at some point in it, they must be connected to the family because Mary comes along and we find out that Jesus is married to a Jewish mother. We hear it clearly that Jesus, we have no more wine. As if he should do something about it. And he says, woman. Maybe in a way that he had called her woman before. Woman, my time has not yet come. And she, being the nice Jewish mother, who may have thought, after all I've been through getting into the Bible, I ought to get one request. She turns and says, do whatever he tells you to do. Meaning, tell him to do something. Maybe you've had your mother put you in a box like that. My mother, of course, never did because she's sitting right there. And this story is wonderful that Jesus asked them to go fill these large barrels up with water. And by the time they get them filled up and take the steward, the headmaster of the wedding, a bit of the wine, there's not water, but it's elegant. It's the best wine ever. And the guy who's running the wedding says, this is really odd. Usually you bring out the good stuff first. Why are you bringing out the good stuff last? And it's a great wedding. And John says, this was the first sign. He uses that language. This is the first sign. John counts it. Jesus may have said, my time has not yet come. But from the ancient crusty days of the 90s AD, perhaps that deep into the first century, as John looks back at what happened in Palestine so long ago, he says that was the first sign. It really started right there. And I think of this Jesus, who is the man who can go to the wedding and enter into the music and be the one who is not afraid to say, yeah, I know what it's like at a wedding when you run out of the wine. It's not very good. We better get some more. We better get some more because we don't embarrass the bride and the groom. Don't want to embarrass my mom. Don't mind making more wine. And this Jesus, he knew about wine. He made grapes and fermentation processes and things like that. He did that. And years ago, I preached a sermon where I tried to baptize this wine and make it into something like Welch's. My historians came up to me and went, no. There's prohibitionist reconstructions of the wedding feast at Cana that have gotten into 20th century Christian literature, but they are patently false. And I went, never mind. And it just had to be Jesus making wine at the wedding. All that joy, all that perfume, all that graciousness, all that promising, all that covenant, all of that forever, all of that till death do us part. And Jesus is there for all of it. And then he goes to Capernaum and he's there for a while with his folks and his mother and his brothers and sisters. And then he goes to Jerusalem. And now, as Luke read just a while ago, now you have what looks like a more formal beginning to a ministry. Now this is the way you start a ministry, but this is in a different place. You know, in Jerusalem, if you go to the temple, there's a place called the Dung Gate. The Dung Gate. You don't even think you want to go in the Dung Gate. don't even supposed to say dung gate in church. But they have one in Jerusalem. A gate. And this is the place where they bring all the cattle in. This is the place where they bring all the sheep in. And this is where the cattle and the sheep leave. What cattle and sheep leave? And it's here that they have everybody standing around in this holy place, and there are people buying and then selling the cattle for sacrifice. And this place doesn't smell like a wedding. This smells like a barnyard on pavement. And this smells like the cross between a cattle sale and First Church of the Jewish Nation. And people are out there bartering and buying their sacrifices, and there is a lot of trading going on. And Jesus walks into this environment, and this is not a wedding, and this is not where they're dancing, and this is not where they're promising, but this is where there are people who are making it their business to beat people out of an extra profit on the way of helping them get a sacrifice to Holy God. And while Jesus is willing to help a wedding, He is not willing to help these sacrifices. He is willing to say yes to this, but He is willing to say no to this. And soon, the man who's the mild-mannered participant in the life of the wedding is the man who now has a stormy north side. And He is casting out, and He is turning over tables, and the cattle are wondering what got into him, and sheep are scattered and birds are flying. And Jesus has said, zeal, zeal, zealous, zeal for my house will consume me. Zeal for the God's house will consume me. Zeal. Love for my mom will help me make gallons of wine. But love for my father and his house will make that fire go up my back and that heat to splatter across the base of my skull, and I will feel my eyes focus and the muscles tense across my back and arms, and I will drive you out, Jesus says. And if Jesus is the Son of Man, if Jesus knows what's in man, then He knows in John chapter 2 that there are places for your yes, and there are places for your no. There are places for your entering in, and there are places for your setting a boundary and a standard. There's a place for being the kind co-enjoyer of life, and there is a place to say, I don't go here. Beyond this I cannot step. I must tell you no. He's not just the prince of getting along. He is the prince of peace and judgment. And we see it. And John includes in his telling of it the story that says Jesus, when asked about a sign, would say, if you tear down this temple, I'll build it back in 3 days. Herod, crazy nutcase that he was, just nutty, been building that temple for a long time. Herodian stones, and it's pretty amazing. 46 years. Jesus, it says, John says, looking back at it through decades of memory, Jesus was talking about his body that would be raised after he had died. And he reminds us here at the beginning of the story that this Jesus that knows us, this Jesus who is the Son of Man, the one who will say yes and the one who will say no, is the one who has said yes to us in His death and resurrection. And He says that when Jesus was raised from the dead, His disciples remembered this and believed in Him. Oh, yes. After we'd been to the wedding, we went to Jerusalem. And Jesus cleared the temple. And He said, if you tear down this temple, I will raise it back in 3 days. Ah, yes. The man who says yes to the parties and no to the cheating in the temple. This is the one who died for us. This is the one who is the Son of Man. I hope that you have a sense that the Jesus who died for you is not some caricature, not some oddball freak kind of a person that just ended up somehow crossways with Pilate, literally. I hope you have a sense that the one who died for you is sweet Jesus of the wedding and righteous, powerful, angry Jesus in the temple. And I hope you have this sense that by His death and resurrection, He calls for both of those elements to come rising out of you, rising out of us as a church. That we are a people of a sweet yes to life. A sweet life affirming impulse that comes into the world, that we're not just grumpy all the time, snorting, I don't know why they do things like that, I don't know. That we don't have that kind of attitude about life. We embrace life. But our yes to life is not so broad that we no longer can sense where sin is and where oppression is, and we are able to speak truth to power and say, enough, far enough, enough. That within us, by God's grace, reside the great godly yes and no. And I pray we hear it today. And I hope it's good news in your life. If you're all yes, then maybe you need to learn something about Jesus. If you're all no, maybe you need to learn something about Jesus. Jesus knows what's in you. He invites us to come to know what's in Him. May God bless us as we do. If you need to come closer to Jesus, come today. Let's stand and sing together.